Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of the podcast with myself, Jer. This week's episode is an interview with an author, entrepreneur, ultra endurance athlete, public speaker, and event organizer, all the way from Pittsburgh in the USA. His name is Wayne Kurtz, and many people who are involved in ultra triathlon will be familiar with his name and familiar with what he has done in the ultra endurance world. Wayne has competed in some serious events like double Ironmans, treble Ironmans, and he's done to date 5 DECAs in total. Wayne also took part in the only ever treble DECA back in 2013 in Lake Garda in Italy. So that's 30 Ironmans in 30 days. So a few guys were over there and finished that in some really poor weather as well. So it's unbelievable feat of endurance and an accomplishment. Wayne has also taken part in ultra endurance cycling events, including the Tour Divide and Race Across America. At the moment, Wayne is organising a couple of events, one in his hometown of Pittsburgh called the Steel Twitch Triathlon, one held in New Orleans at the end of the year in November, called the Decaman USA. So there's a lot of events at that one, including DECAs, continuous DECAs, double DECAs, continuous double DECAs, and the second only treble DECA, which is obviously, as we said earlier, 30 Ironmans in 30 days, and that's a race that I'm going to take part in this year as well. Wayne's other big event now this year is taking part in May. That's the Trans Am Tri. So that is going to be the first ever point-to-point or coast-to-coast triathlon held in any country ever. So that starts in Florida with a 50k swim, then out to the east coast, touch your wheel in the sea, and then cycle all the way across to the west coast, actually to Death Valley, where you start your run then up through Death Valley and then run out to the coast and touch your foot into the water there as well. So really looking forward to taking part in that one as well this year myself. Wayne's really top of his game now when it comes to organising events and taking part as well. Wayne will actually be taking part in the Trans Am Tri himself. So we talk a lot about all these races and how he got started as well. So this is a brilliant chat, one I've been really looking forward to doing with Wayne over the past couple of years. We've chatted back and forward on Messenger and Facebook, so it's the first time I actually sat down with him and had a good chat. So get yourself a cup of tea or a bottle of water or whatever it is you're into there. Sit back and enjoy. As well, if you could, let me know if you enjoyed the chat or the podcast. And hit me up on Spotify and iTunes with a nice 5-star review. That'd be really appreciated and really helps the growth of the podcast. I've taken a break off the past couple of weeks from the podcast with heavy training. I'm actually into the last 2 weeks now before my 210-mile run Tunnel Ultra event over in the UK. So I've been really focused on that. But it was great to get a chance to chat with Wayne, and I jumped on it as well. So hope you enjoy this, and look out for my next quick podcast after this one, all about the Tunnel Ultra as well and training, how it's gone for that. So as I say, sit back and enjoy and let me know how you get on. Thanks.
So as said in the intro, we're talking here with Wayne Kurtz from the US. Wayne's an adventure entrepreneur, an author, adventure seeker, public speaker, ultra endurance triathlete, and ultra endurance athlete. Wayne's, as said in the intro, competed in some ridiculous races and pulled off some amazing events. Including 100 milers, 24-hour races, 48-hour races on by run and by bike, some things on the bike, Tour Divide bike race, Trans Am bike race, which are all self-supported. And at this time of year, Wayne's out the door busy with all this tax and investment work. So thanks so much for taking an hour to chat with us, Wayne. Really appreciate your time. And really looking forward to this all week. Like we chat back and forward on Messenger and all, but I'm really looking forward to sit down and chat with you over Skype. So thanks a million for your time, for starters. And if you could just give us a little bit kind of a background on you, talking about some of the stuff that I mentioned there, it'd be really cool.
For sure. And thanks for having me on, Gerald. I mean, it's been good to finally connect via voice. And I can't wait till May when I see you live when we fire the gun doing Trans Am Tri. So plenty to talk about that coming up.
Absolutely.
I think you've covered a lot of it. I mean, I've been around a while. So it's I remember doing the triathlons, and I started, I think it was in 1986? Yeah, actually, 1986 was my first one. And I remember that going back in that time, there weren't many triathlons. There weren't really much ultra running at that point. It was just in its infancy. And if I look back on it, it's been a joy to say the least. And most importantly, the thing, it's not so much about every single race. I think that we all compete in, but it's the people that we meet and the places we go. So for me, that's been the biggest thing. And I remember the quote that I told my mother when I was buying my first bike. And this was a Centurion Dave Scott model. It was, I think, $300. And this was the bike. And I remember I had no money. I mean, I'm in college. I have no money at all. And I painted a couple garages, including my grandmother's, to get enough money. And I told my grandmother or my mother, I told her, I said, well, the worst is over. The biggest expense is done, which is just the bike. So from here on, it's not going to be that bad. And if I look back and I say, how much not only that I've spent, I would do it over again 10 times fold. It really to me was, it's been an amazing run and journey, and I've enjoyed every bit of it and look forward as I get into this next decade of racing for sure. But again, it's busy season for me, as you've highlighted. I own my own companies, investment and tax advisory, and do a fair amount of stuff in that space and consulting. That kind of keeps me really busy in the beginning of the year, then frees up my time being an entrepreneur later in the year to do these crazy events. So hopefully that's enough background. I'm a Pittsburgh guy. You didn't even mention that.
Yeah, I'm from Pittsburgh.
So if anyone over there knows, I mean, we're known for, other than steel back in the 70s, this is football country, American football country. This is like the home of the Pittsburgh Steelers, which is our pride and joy. And so big diehard fan for that perspective. But we are, so I didn't even mention to you, we've got a double iron here, actually, in Pittsburgh. The first time we've ever actually hosted an Ironman or an ultra triathlon in my hometown. And the race is about, it's about 4 miles in the, maybe 2.5 miles from where I actually live in our park. So it's a long journey, and I've really enjoyed trying to get this thing going. It's taken us 12 years to finally get an approval. So I know your pain on trying to host events. It's challenging, but yeah, it does happen. So hopefully that's enough info.
That's the Steel Twitch one, is it?
Yeah, it's Steel Twitch is the name of it. It's in August of this year, and it will have single iron, of course, the regular continuous double, and we will host a team event and most likely a 24-hour trail running race, all part of like the three, four-day race scenario over the big holiday weekend we have here in the U.S., which is Labor Day. Many people are off work, so it'd be kind of fun. And plus, I can run right over there. It's really close to where we live.
Class. That's handy for you. Yeah, brilliant. Also, as well, like, you're fairly modest there as well. You didn't mention the fact that you've done almost, well, I don't know, this is on your website. I was doing a bit of research during the week, so it's probably, you've probably done more now since that's been updated, but 123 Ironman completed. And I was just wondering, is that just, like, I don't want to kind of get ahead of myself, because I want to talk a bit about your triple deca. And for anyone listening, that's 30 Ironmans in 30 days. And I'm just wondering, is the 123, is the triple decker included in your 123?
Yeah, it is. It's the total. So it's kind of the combined Ironmans, even broken down from the continuous deca, which you take the 10. So I kind of just use it there. No, I have not gone on and done 120 individual Ironmans all over the world. That could be, you know, rules for divorce with my wife at that point if I've raced that many. But I actually like the long ones. You know, you can get a bunch of them, and it's, as I always say, it's the cost per mile, right? Or cost per kilometer. Yeah. You can do the Deca and it's only going to cost you X, and you're there for 10 days or 12 days, and you can bang out 10 if you get through it. So that's the total.
Yeah.
So that's the total.
Class. And in that as well, you've done 5 Decas. Is that right?
Yeah. So what am I on Decas here? So we've got, is it 5 or is it 6? Let me think here. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4. I think it is 5. Yeah. So it's 2 and 4. So 2 continuous, 4. I got to double check it. It's either 3 or 4 single 1x10s and then the 1x30, which doesn't count for a Deca. The 1x30 was the triple. But I think it's right. I'm losing track here if it's either 5 or 6. Something like
that. Class. Yeah. Absolutely class. So tell us a bit of, like, I'm dying to hear a bit more about this triple Deca. Like, it's just insane. And you've done that one, you've done this in Lake Garda. So again, 30 Ironmans in 30 days. Can you tell us a bit about that and how that went and how you prepared for it and how you got on over there?
Yeah, that was an interesting one. And I published a book about it with Stefan Zetterström, who's over there in Sweden. Very, very good friend, ultra triathlon buddy. And we put together the book. What was it called? It was Stronger Than Iron. And it was about that race. And it was interesting. Back in that time period, so you got to realize this is 2013. You know, it is a while now. It's like 7 years since that race almost. And the idea came about during the Deca. And one of the best Decas ever was in Sicily. I mean, most people who were there, Dave Clamp and lots of the folks there in Europe, Mike Ward was there. So a lot from your neck of the woods and also throughout Europe. There were only a couple Americans, and I went over to do this race in Sicily, and it was a 1x10. And just imagine, you know, in Sicily, the food was amazing. Everything was great. We had some bad weather, but long story short, after we finished that event, one of the race directors put up a glass and saluted us all and said, boy, wouldn't it be amazing to do 30 in 30 days? Now, this is before, you know, the 50 and 50 and people doing, I mean, it was kind of the start of it in a real race. So a timed event, not a self-supported. Nothing against the ones that where, you know, people do their own. That's fine.
Yeah.
But it was really kind of the first of the first. And this was a hard sales pitch to my wife. And I kept telling her in the car that, you know, I'm getting ready for the TD. I didn't even want to use the word triple deck. I just said TD. This is a month of time. So with business and everything, I was trying to figure out how to handle it with emails and all that kind of thing. So the logistics of getting it kind of coordinated with clients and work was one aspect, because everyone just kind of thinks, well, how do you do it? It took a lot. And everyone who was there at the race, I mean, you had to manage work and you had to manage family by being gone so long, because there had not been anything at this point. I don't even know if Transcontinental had started by then. It might. I don't think it did. I can't remember when Transcontinental Bike Race or Trans Am. So there weren't that many of these 30-day events. So long story short, again, the race was held in Lake Garda. It was crazy. You know, the race, a few highlights is when we got there, the group lost the race course, which was closed in venue. So they had to pretty much put this race together in a matter of a day and a half on an open road. And I mean, it was wild to say the least. I mean, the first part of the race, I was almost out, I think on day like 3. During a crash. And our great friend Alexandra, most of the ultra triathlon folks know Alexandra on, you know, the one of the top female ultra triathletes. I don't know how many world records she owns now. She's done RAM and all that kind of thing. She was actually coming down the hill. She's doing the triple deck and I was kind of turning and we kind of crashed head on to each other. So I'm full of blood. She's full of blood. Long story short, this was like on day 3 because the bike course was literally maybe a mile up a hill and turn around and go down. That was the bike course we had. So you went up the steep hill, turn around, back, I don't know, maybe a mile, mile and a half. As they were trying to figure out a better way to find a loop course where we didn't have traffic. So it was a challenge in the beginning. And many people had dropped out just because it was so brutal in the beginning. So long story short on that aspect, sadly, Alexandra was injured more than me. She hung in there for, I don't know how many days, 9 or 10. And my wife was ready to pull me out because the race was, it was kind of crazy there in the beginning. We had crashes. There was all kinds of things going on. And the organizers were trying to do everything they could. And they were great, trying to keep it together. And I brought another bike, thank God, because I had smashed the other bike, the time trial bike. So I kind of told my wife, and she thought we were done. I said, no, just go get the other bike. And then I kind of hung in. And after we got through the first, it was really like the first week, 7, 8 days, like all of these long ultras, it really, you got into a routine. The race organizers, everyone was in a much better format where they ironed out the best race course that we could use at that time. And, you know, again, I mean, I had accidents. I got hit by a car twice. I mean, I wasn't the only one. There were lots of things, hit by rearview mirrors and Italian drivers. I mean, it was wild. I mean, and sadly, I mean, the sad part of it is we lost one of our great athletes in it who would have been right at the top, Kim Greisen from Denmark, a great friend. I mean, an amazing athlete. And he crashed on a turn and actually dislocated and broke his hip. And I talk about this in the book, and you talk about grit, determination. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like this in my life, especially when someone still has that much adversity. And in this scenario, he crashed, breaks his hip. I mean, shatters it. And we saw the x-rays after this happened, but he did another Ironman and I think the swim of the next day on the broken hip. It was unbelievable. He could barely walk. The next morning when they were putting him in the water, there were, you know, a couple guys were lifting him to get him in the water. And Kim he said to me, it was the best, Wayne, do you know, and of course, know my wife, Jan, who's crewed a bunch of these for me. Does Jan have any ibuprofen? Do you think you could spare one ibuprofen? I mean, this guy he is gritting his teeth. And we remember this. I mean, it was unbelievable. And it was sad. He then had to go to the hospital. And he planned on coming back after he did the swim. He did the swim, took him to the hospital, and he was planning on coming back. He had plenty of time, right, to go do the bike and the run. And they came back, and he was devastated. I mean, and that was put a damper early on into the race because we lost a really, really good guy and a great spirit for the race. But as we got through into that second week, it was interesting to see, as you probably know, most of the listeners, I mean, you get incredibly fit when you go out over 7 to 10 days. And we all noticed it. I think the time period was about day 11. It was like clockwork. All the time started dropping. So, you know, you're getting fitter and fitter and fitter, and you don't have to work as hard at all through the whole day. And everyone's dropping 2 hours on the marathon on their Ironman times. Wow. So, you know, I was doing, I think, 12s. The winners were doing 10s.
Wow.
Every day, and you kept getting faster and faster with the same effort or less. And that was the thing that really was interesting from day 12 through, I'd say, 23, 24, and then the roof caved in with the weather. And then it was horrific. I mean, we had rain, and the water temperature was 50 Fahrenheit. I mean, it was absolutely freezing, and it was like hyperthermic. And for me, that was really the point where it was kind of the breaking point. But most of the athletes that had dropped out all dropped out early. They were all out by day 9 or 10. So there were 8 of us left for literally the last 20 days. And everyone knew they were going to finish. You know, Ference was there and the whole crew. I mean, most people know the folks that finished it. And there was a gentleman that we won't forget. One of the highlights to me personally was there's a gentleman from Italy. His name was Angelo. And he ripped his feet to shreds with blisters on like the second or third day on the run. I don't know what happened, but he was in my swim lane with Farrakhan. And I mean, he could barely walk. So he was finishing every Ironman. It had to be 2 or 3 in the morning. He went and did 30 Ironmans, and I don't think he slept more than 2.5 hours a night, maybe 3. Wow. It was incredible. And the guy finished.
That's insane.
He was a great cyclist, so he went all out on the bike, and then his feet got infected, so they had to fix the blisters. I mean, all the things that happened, you know, in a decade just multiplied because the challenge is it's managing the injuries and the things that go wrong until you get yourself in kind of that comfortable numb spot of pain. And that's what happened in the race. But it was incredible watching, even at the front. I mean, with Gregor from Sweden and Joseph, who won the race. I mean, they were cranking out 3.5 hour marathon. I mean, it was at that time, it was amazing in that kind of weather. We didn't have pristine conditions by any means. And it was kind of neat watching, you know, from the back. And so there were 8 of us, so 2 Americans. There was a young guy from America who's finished as well, with, you know, limited ultra triathlon experience. And it was a great learning lesson. He had been an ultra runner. So he had ultra running experience, but he was 23, I think, when he did it and finished. It was amazing. And nice Jose from Spain and Steve from the UK. I think Steve Harvey was 4th, as I recall. Gregor, and I think I got them all there. But there were 8 of us that finished, and it was a journey I don't think any of us will ever forget. It was a bond like anything else. Ference actually was 2nd. That was the war between... It was kind of interesting watching the dynamics of the race, because you've got the 2 premier Hungarian, ultra triathletes going at it. I mean, and they finished within an hour or 2 hours max. I mean, it came down all the way to the end. And Joseph was an amazing runner. And if you don't know Joseph, he's incredible on the run in a 1x. I mean, he just cranks them. He was great. So you really get to know all these folks. And Daniel from Switzerland, he did 20 and wasn't signed up for the 30. And he's in the book, of course, as well. He's a great friend. And Daniel, we convinced him to do one more. And he was broken like we were all. We could barely walk. And I'll never forget it. And he had to go back to work. That's why he could only do 20. He'd only signed up for 20. But it was a wild time in Lake Garda. I mean, it was... I think for everyone who was there, it was life changing. It was like doing the first really, really big race, especially in 30 days. And it everything changes when you're going that many weeks out. I mean, we went through an entire season. So we went through fall harvest, and you just watched the area, snow in the mountains and the Dumaltis. I guess that was the mountain range where we were near. You could see them in the distance, and there's nothing on it. And then all of a sudden it's got snow. All of the fall harvest is going on. The wine season's over. I mean, it was crazy how long it lasted. And I think when I asked Ference as an example, and he's, you know, Ference, we know how great of an athlete he is in the deck. He wins most of all these ones in the double deck, of course. But I remember talking to Ference, and he said to me, he said, Wayne, this was enough. It was actually a little too long. And it was. I mean, it really was long. I mean, the days just, you kept going through it day after day. And I think that was the thing that I remember the most, is everyone was pretty much broken done at the end. And even the top folks, I mean, Joseph told me he couldn't have gone another day. His hamstrings were gone. I mean, he's got, everyone was taped. I mean, you've got tape everywhere. You don't realize the magnitude of the nagging injuries then become really big injuries. And I mean, everything was hurting at the end. And it was interesting. You touched your skin. Just with like your index finger, just touch it at the end, and everything hurt. It's unbelievable how bad it was. Same. But we all got through it. It was life changing.
It sounds Well, the beauty of these kind of things, it was similar for us in Deca UK. I went over as the only Irish person, and I didn't know anybody at all. And by the time after 10 days. You know, had made especially with the finishing guys, lifelong friends then, you know, guys who are still in contact with. But that was back in 2013, your one. So, and it sounds like you're still in contact with all the guys. It's definitely another benefit of doing these kind of ultra endurance events, the camaraderie and the spirit. It's almost like a team sport in a way, isn't it?
It really is. And it does, you know, the thing that makes it unique, it's a pro and a con. The pro is when you have these circuit type of, you know, races, the ultras where you're doing the loops, everyone knows everyone, because it's the crews that are there, the volunteers and the race team and the athletes. And the one thing that is nice, and it's like ultra running, we see the same thing. I know you've experienced it. When you're doing those short kind of loops, everyone chips in. And everyone helps. I mean, it was very difficult to get crewing for all of this. So there were shifts of people coming in. I mean, Stefan and his wife-to-be at the time, Gisela, I mean, they were doing 30 Olympic distance triathlons, which still, I mean, it was a lot still every single day. And they would finish their race, get driven back to where I was at, and would help crew for me on the bike when I had a gap in time. And I think that's the thing about the ultra triathlon crowd that was so nice is you get to know everyone. The downside is, you know, the hamster wheel. I mean, it does get to you after a while. And I think, I think, personally, as I get older and I've done a lot of these and I get all the doubles and all the other races as well, when you get in that circuit thing, there's a lot of that family atmosphere to it for sure. But it also, it kind of wears on you when, you know, the boom of all of the new self-supported and other events where you're going point to point to a certain degree. When I finally jumped back to that, it kind of got me kind of fired up a little bit. It's hard now to kind of keep doing the loops. But everyone's different. I mean, every aspect to the racing is different. For sure. And there's no question. I mean, I love doing the ultra triathlons. There's no question about that. And I will, I look forward to Claire's because I'm coming over in, when is it, September for Claire's brutal quintuple. Oh. But the nice thing on that one is if it's a longer loop, and I know it's hard in our world, but when it's a little bit longer, you add a different dynamic to it. And I think sometimes all of us, you know, when we do these races, we become a little too needy. And I remember, don't we become a little too needy that we got to have everything every mile. If you go back to the first Ironmans, I mean, my first one, I mean, we had no aid stations on the run. There was nothing. I mean, they had Coke was the only thing on the bike. And then we got to the point where we have everything every mile. So I think there's a balance to some. Memories and the families and the people that I've met. I mean, all, especially throughout Europe, and I raced in Europe, and it's just a different environment over there. And for me personally, I loved it because you go to Slovenia and the entire town comes out. I mean, there's zillions of people that are out all night banging pots and pans, and in Hungary as well. So to me, that was a little different than here in the U.S., where ours are a little bit more in remote areas where you don't have those volumes of people. So each one is different, pros and cons, but you know, the people that I have met have been super. I mean, all of them across the board.
You mentioned there about the you know, people are different and stuff, but I'd much prefer the loops, I think, as opposed to a point to point. But you know, of course, I'm still very early in my kind of ultra journey, if you want. But you were saying, if they're even a little bit longer, the loops, I think, is definitely a benefit in terms of breaking momentum. In our deca, we had, I think it was like three miles of it, and out and back on the bike. And it's just, you know, you're slowing down within every kind of 7 minutes or so, you know, to get a turnaround. And it really, it makes the bike so, like, it adds on hours over the day, you know, that way, probably 2 hours if over the day. Whereas if it's, even a loop, like a kind of a circle road or whatever, where it's not like a cone you're turning around, or even if it's a little bit longer, it definitely makes it, you know, a bit easier in terms of you can keep going with momentum wise as well. So I was looking at your one there for USA, Decaman USA in New Orleans, and you seem to have a good kind of track there. I think it's 7 mile long.
Yeah, it's 7 miles. We changed it a bit this time, and we're going to go to a different part of the park, which is a little closer, believe it or not, to actually see some people. I mean, it's one thing not having traffic, you know, which is a key component, but it's also, when we put the first Decaman on in the first course, you never know until you get the first one under your belt. We were so remote. I mean, there's no one around, and it's dark, of course, because you've got this canopy of trees. So we changed the bike course to be around, it's roughly around the same distance as it was before, but to actually get to see people and, you know, actually people to have an idea that there's actually an event going on, because it's a big deal in New Orleans. It really is. Yeah. The community support has been overwhelming, but many people just didn't know about it because we're hidden in this one area of the park. So yes, the bike will be 7, and I flipped the run a bit. Okay. So we're not doing a 1 mile out and back, you know, out a half mile, back a half mile. Yeah. the typical 1 mile loop or, you know, 2K loop. It will be a 5K loop. It's about 5K. And we will have it at a big aid station at the turn. You know, everyone was worried about, will we have, absolutely. We'll have the music, have all of the food, and one at a really cool area, which is right at the lake. So the one thing I wanted to make sure that we changed was, just like the bike course, I mean, it was fine. There's no one there. That's a good. The bad was, is there's no one there. So you really don't see anything other than trees. So the change in the run course, I think, will be really beneficial, where you actually get down and you run toward the lake. You get to see the beautiful Lake Pontchartrain. And at night, it's gorgeous. When the sun sets, you know, and if the weather's good, it's spectacular. You run around the main wash area. I mean, there's bathroom facilities, huge buildings, and you come around. So it's a little longer run, but we will have aid for everyone who needs something at the mile and a half point, because 3 miles can take a while. I mean, it could take well over an hour for something, easily over an hour. If you're dragging and they're, you know, and things are going wrong, you know, and you take stops. I mean, it could be an hour and a half to come back. So we're making sure that we have that. So we did those two changes.
I tell you, I probably jumped a bit ahead there. So just for a bit of context for anyone listening, that Stickerman USA, your first one was last year, was it, Wayne? And then this year you're adding in the treble decker as well. But that this treble decker now this year will be the second treble decker ever done after your one that was at Lake Garda in 2013. Is that correct?
That is correct. So the first one was in 2018. So we did the first one in 2018. We took last year off to kind of regroup and... You know, we've kind of rebuilt some of the team members to help out, because it takes a ton of help, as you know. And we've got a really first class group who were all down there in 2018 in New Orleans. And, you know, one of the key members is a gentleman by the name of Don Devaney. And Don has been involved, was one of the originators in Spartan. If you know Spartan, of course, the famous obstacle racing. Don's been around forever, and he brought the idea of doing basically a festival, a year of endurance festival at the end of the year, and host a multitude of events so we could cross over, because not everyone can do the DECA. And I threw out the idea, since we've got the venue, and if we can host the continuous double DECA, which was, you know, it's only been hosted a couple times. What is it? Three times, I think now. One, two, three. Yeah, we just had the third one in Mexico. Could we pull off the triple DECA? And of course, everyone on the team looked at me and said, oh my God, you know what that's going to require? I said, yeah, I was there the last time, but I wasn't directing. It was like, it's one thing racing. It's a different world when you're kind of directing. It's in my opinion, it's harder because there's so many logistical things. So we put it together and decided, okay, we've got, you know, access. The benefit we do is we have a lake there, and that does help, because it's hard getting pools for that many days. So what we also did was trying to find a pool that would host, you know, 60 to 70 hour swim for the double DECA. And we just inked the deal last year with a brand new pool, 50 meter indoor. So we got that covered. So we're pretty excited. Yeah, it will be the second trip. It will be interesting to see how everyone kind of evolves in it. I think the last one, the finish rate was less than 40%. I think it was about 35% finished the triple DECA from the starters. I'm guessing it'll probably be around 40%. And a lot of it is mainly because of injuries and the stuff that happens. So there'll be bike crashes. I mean, everyone always worries about safety. And, you know, the bike crashing happens in every one of the races I've ever been in, because people fall asleep. They go off the side of the road. You know, you're in the middle of the night. Things go wrong. So, I mean, those are things that are the injuries from crashes or of those that magnitude. And I remember in Lake Garda, I think we'll get a chuckle out of this. One of the guys who finished, Jose, he ran directly into a tree on the run, head on. And we had to put a flag on the tree. I mean, it was on the run course. I mean, you had to work your way. But when it's pitch black and, you know, you haven't slept at all, things go wrong, like at day 20. Trust me, they go really wrong. So yeah, it you know, we're kind of excited about it. I think, you know, we've got, I don't know how many we have in it at this point. We've got 10 or 12, I think, something like that, as I recall, in the triple. My guess, before we get to the race, it'll probably be in that 10 range, you know, because people actually showing up because of injuries, things happen, whatever else. I think our original list has about 18 on it, but my guesstimate would be 10 to 12. So it'd be just a few less than what we had in over in Italy. I think we had 21 or something like that, as I recall, in Italy. But there's a lot of other events as well. So there's people that are interested in doing other races. So we've got everything there. I think we've got 13 races going on. It's kind of crazy.
How will you the continuous 20-day continuous guys do their swim? Will they have to swim in the dark?
No, they're going to be in the pool. We got this brand new.
Oh, they'll be in the pool.
Yeah, it's actually so what we're doing there is it's actually on the border. It's in Mississippi, so you got Louisiana, and then right next to it is Mississippi. It's about a 40-minute drive, and then we will shuttle them back. But it took everything in the world to try. I mean, it's one thing getting a pool for 24 hours for the DECA. It's a whole different world to try to sell the idea that we need to take off their whole pool for, 2.5 days. And great group from the folks that are on the ground down there in Louisiana and Mississippi. We've locked in a really nice pool. The aquatic center looks gorgeous, but we're just hosting the double DECA there because we can't have them in the lake. I mean, God knows. I mean, they'd be swimming for day after day. Craziness. And I know how bad. I was in Mexico this year, and we heard a lot about. And I was there for the previous double DECA in Mexico, going back. I don't know how many years, probably 8-9 years earlier when Ference had won, and I was doing the DECA, and we're all swimming together. So I remember how bad it was, and the water temperature that day was an indoor pool, was 85 or 86 degrees. It was loads of chlorine, and there's no way around that. I mean, that's one thing I tell everyone is. You're doing the double decking, you're doing that swim, it's going to be miserable because there's no way you can control the chlorine with everyone in the water for that many hours. It's going to be higher, and you just hope that the water temperature kind of maintains. But the body starts shutting down, it gets cold, or it's too hot, you can't wear the wetsuit. I mean, I remember seeing what they look like. So the swim, I'm sure, in New Orleans for the double decking, it will be bad. I'm sure it will be for what. That a magnitude of doing that many laps of what can kind of happen. And they were a mess in Mexico this year. I mean, it's the standard. It's always the same. You just got to get out of the swim, basically.
Yeah. So staying with the Decaman brand, obviously you have Decaman USA this year, but you've put together a few other races now, haven't you, with Decaman Brazil, Sicily, and Cyprus, is it?
Yeah, so the one that we've got in the works right now as a go ahead. We're trying to get the final dates on it. It will be in Cyprus. So Decaman Cyprus, I think many know, you probably know as well, I'm married to a Greek woman. So we go to Greece quite often. And I have raced in Cyprus multiple times in running races and have been involved with the marathon, the long donkey 135-mile run over there. That we put together years ago. And long story short, I was offered an opportunity with a good friend who was in Greece, who's moved to Cyprus, very well connected. Why would we not host the DECA in Cyprus? And I said, well, I don't know. We never really talked about it. So long story short, that looks like a go. I should have everything finalized over the next 60 days. It will be April of 2021. It will be the first DECA open water swim for the continuous. And we have it in a bay right in the Mediterranean, very safe. They put on a tremendous amount of swim races over there, long ones, all different distances. So we will have the first ever, and they will be swimming through the night in the open water for the continuous. There'll be a 1x10, 1x5, and we have the extreme race, which is a self-supported event that's going to go all through the mountain ranges, adventure, very similar to Trans Am Tri, which we'll talk about in a minute. So that will be part of it. But I think it's going to be the second week of April, and I will have more info on that one. To highlight the others, we're working on Sicily right now with a good friend, Giorgio, trying to figure out. We've got the race course set. We're seeing if we can get all the final approvals. And then the Brazil came out of nowhere with the good friends down there. They said, and I've always wondered why there's never been one in South America, because there's great athletes down there. I've spent a lot of time in Brazil and Ecuador over the years for business, and we are going to try to put that together. I don't have a timing on it. We are in the discussions now to see if we can pull, something off. And then, of course, next up is, to get the one there in Ireland. That's the big, because I haven't been to Ireland. So this is like, this should be high on the radar screen. And I think add a completely different environment to the Deca. No question, from the country, the location, from the weather, from all of that. And I think that's the aspect that would be pretty interesting. So again, the goal is to try to take the Decaman brand and build upon it. We have a series of other events on the self-supported, and also we are exploring where a lot of racing is moving toward, the use of fast gravel, and it gets away from all the danger zone of dealing with the roads and all the logistics. And if it's tightly packed gravel, you can fly on it. So for folks that really want to go fast, you're really not losing a whole lot. Got to change a little bit on the bike, but getting off the road a bit to some degree is a long-term mission that we want to try to do. There's no question of that.
Yeah. Adds a bit more adventure to it by the sounds of it, for sure.
Yeah. And it's interesting. It's, if you kind of look across the sports, I mean, everyone has had their growth spurts. We saw the marathons really boom, and they're starting to, numbers are coming down. Triathlon had its peak and then dropped, and then it peaked again, and it's kind of flattened. We had Spartan. We've had all these various races, but what is booming globally, I mean, globally, is go back 5 years ago and just pick the, this type in Google 5 years ago, bike pack races. And there were a handful. And, it started with Transcontinental when Mike Hall over there put the first one on. The Tour de Divide was probably the first one, Canada to Mexico and the Continental Divide Trail. That was probably the first signature one. And then when Mike Hall put on the Transcontinental, it all started from there. And now Trans Am, and now there's zillions of them. And the whole idea is, some self-supported adventure component to it. It takes away some of the logistical nightmare. And if it's like a lot of them now, it gets people off of the main roads. I mean, you've got the great one there in Ireland. I mean, it's on my bucket list. The crazy one. I mean, it's brutal weather. It looks amazing. I can't remember the name of it, but it's a long one. I don't know how many days, like multiple weeks. Transatlantic. I think it's called. So that's definitely on my list. And you can see how much even that race has grown. And so to me, I mean, it's one aspect that we're going to try to make sure we keep that in the back of our mindsets through, kind of building out the portfolio of races and saying what's doable and what's not doable. I have to tell you, and we'll talk about it here in a second, when we talk about Trans Am Tri, I didn't think we'd have more than two people sign up. I did not. I never thought we would get this many people to sign up for this crazy kind of thing. So who knows? We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think, as you say, the bike packing side of it really appeals to a lot of people, like the whole adventure side of it as well. I know there's a couple of lads over here who are doing similar stuff as well. And I'm definitely going to get into it now, especially after spending €400 on a few bike bikes today.
Well, Now the good news is you got a good brand. The Ortlieb bags will be good. You'll have them forever. But it does make you, I'll give an example. If you're going to do a race, it's like back in the 80s, what we used to do. We would go and bike to a running race. Do the running race, but again, there was never a security issue. You just threw your bike there, do the 10K or the half marathon, and then there weren't many half marathons. There were 10-mile races back in the 80s. That was the big race, and then we would bike home. So you can do the same thing. I did one last year, a couple years ago, where I biked to the double Ironman, and then and my wife picked us up. We didn't bike home, but we biked down that 300 miles, then do the race, and then and it's changing the mindset once you get used to the aspect of the freedom and the adventure of the road to a certain degree. It's very hard to replace. And I have not, I converted a bunch. So, this is the American selling, right? I'm selling all the time on, on bike packing. It changes you. I mean, it really does. And it's so, so different when you have to constantly be thinking about the next place to get water, to get food, all those aspects. So it makes it completely different than any other kind of racing. When you're, and they have them for running races, it's not just biking. I mean, they've plenty of self-supported running races, and then they've got all these other components, and it just adds another environment of in your brain that it, your brain doesn't shut down. You're always kind of thinking, and it's really cool because you got to be able to improvise non-stop when stuff goes wrong. And that's the thing that has attracted me. And again, it, you know, I think for anyone else who's done a lot of races over the years, it's just something different.
Well, that's definitely what attracted me to it now, was the kind of exploration side of it. And for me, the Trans Am Trojaner was, it's almost like two famous races in one, like the Trans America bike race itself. And then I've always wanted to do the Badwater in Death Valley. So it takes in a bit of that as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. So to give everyone kind of an update on the Trans Am Tri. So the Trans Am Tri came up, basically the idea started during about day 22 in the Triple Deca in 2013, where you got to realize we're all out on the run. There's only eight of us there. I mean, you really get to know people when you're with them for a month, to say the least. We covered every subject from, you know, American football. Why do they say football and you can use your hands, all the way to politics, but what's happening in the economy. I mean, we covered every subject imaginable. You can think of it. And I love the banter. I mean, I do. And it's great because we can have a good time. And the idea came up, and I don't remember who all the people that were there that day. I know Steve Harvey from England, one of the great, you know, ultra triathletes back in the day. He was super. He said to me, man, it would be wild if we did, if you pull off some kind of triathlon across the U.S. And then, you know, like a day later, we all started talking about it on the run. I mean, you're talking about it. And it's always been in my mind, is there a way to put on a race? Now, you got to think about the magnitude of the country. So you got, I got 3,000 miles or more to get across. And back at that time, there was no such thing as bike pack racing. 2013, there was no bike pack racing other than the Tour de Divide. There was nothing. So it came to my thought when we formed some of the new team with Deca Man and the race group. And I thought, I threw it out to them, and they all said, well, let's do it. We now have the ability to do it because we can have the timing done by track leaders, all self-supported with spot tracking. We don't need to have aid stations for the biggest part of it if we add self-supported for the bike. And the challenge we had initially was I got to find a location for the swim. And the idea was, we're, you know, we need to make the swim longer than the Deca. I just like the idea of 50K. Someone said, how'd you come up with 50K? I said, I don't know. I just punted and said 50K sounds good for the swim.
Nice round number, yeah.
Yeah. And people know 50K from ultra running, right? Do a 50K.
Yeah.
And you know, we're in the U.S., you know, we don't do any metric here. We're backwards, as you know. Everyone knows how backwards we're on the metric system. You know, I don't know. We don't know kilometers. We don't know centimeters and meters. And we were taught that when I was in school in the 1970s, and then they banned it. And they said, we're not going to do it. So none of us know it. It's terrible. But what happened is this, is I was able to find a lake in Orlando that has hosted ultra swimming races for since 1977. And I got a referral, long story short, to a friend, worked out, talked to the guy who actually lives on this little private lake. And he said, yeah, we've hosted him here forever. His name's Lucky is his name. He's a doctor down there in Orlando. And he said, sure, I'll give you the facilities. We have a big event that's in May, so you can use all of our stuff. You know, you can use the boats, and you can use the whole area there, the picnic pavilions for support. And he said, we'll bring some of our crowd out, of course. So once we got the swim, it was a go, because I know we could piece together the bike course. And the nice thing was, is the swim's 50K in Orlando, and then we bike from Orlando to the coast of the Atlantic coast over to St. Augustine. And there is a bike route through the Adventure Cycling Association that is called the Southern Tier. It goes from the East Coast to the West Coast on the southern part of the U.S. So we have a lot of bike routes, but this is one that typically is done in the wintertime if you're on the East Coast, January, February, March. No one does it usually after March because it gets quite hot, as you can imagine. So I figured, okay, well, we got an opportunity to go from coast to coast, but we need to figure out how to do the run. So my crazy idea was, well, maybe we take and divert everyone up to Death Valley off of the main route. So we're going to go from the coast of St. Augustine, Florida on the Atlantic, all the way over to Arizona on the southern part of the U.S. through a bunch of states on the trail. And then we will go north and divert off to get into Death Valley. And my original thought was to have Death Valley be the run, and that was it. And then I had a few Americans who were saying to me, "What, you got to go to the coast. Yeah. So maybe we should run to the coast." So that was someone else that brought that up. I don't remember where it came from. But we had to then figure out how to get a running route from Death Valley over to the ocean, which is ends up being 300 miles. So it has taken some time to get it all together, but the official distance is now for May and the first, I think it's the first ever across a country triathlon that is an official kind of, you know, it's an event that's timed, not a self-supported journey. I don't know if it's ever been done in the world. I don't think it has. So it'll be a 50K swim, 3,000 mile bike, and about a 300 mile run over the mountains through Death Valley on trail all the way down to the ocean. And it finishes north of LA. So north of Los Angeles, it's up a piece in a really neat cove area. So when I put it together, Jer, I mean, initially I thought, okay, I'm doing this. That was the original thing. I wanted to do it. and it wasn't because a lot of times it's like, I'd like to try because we all came up with it in 2013. I thought, I got to do this. And I figured maybe I'd get one or two people. I really thought I'd get maybe two. And when the team put it together and they said, okay, let's get this out, get it up on the website, we were floored. I couldn't believe it. I mean, we had about 140 or 50 people right out of the gate that sent information. We want info. And I didn't think I've ever expected that. I think we're at 16 or 17 in the race. And that's typical. If you get 100 people that are interested, you know, you'll probably narrow it down in this kind of event to 20 people or whatever. And I was floored. I mean, we were literally floored. And it was like, okay, let's make sure we get everything, all of our ducks in order and get it ready to go. And I'm very excited about it. It's going to be, I don't know if there will ever be a race this difficult because of the, and it's more semi-supported, not self-supported. So, of course, there's support in the swim, we have the boats and the lights and all that. The bike is self-supported, and then the run is supported, and it needs to be supported. I mean, we're running in, you know, in Fahrenheit, it'll be 125 degrees when we get to Death Valley. I've been out there in June and in July, been out the Badwater. I mean, it's incredible, the heat. So the distance along with the magnitude of the self-supported component in the middle and the overall heat factor, I don't know if there will be an ultra triathlon that has been held that would be this difficult. So I think that would be attraction to some people. I mean, I have to tell you from the list, it was, okay, I want to do an adventure. This looks wild. I get to go across the U.S. Even the Europeans who were coming, you know, they would say, like, you know, this looks really cool. The interesting aspect is you don't realize it until you get over here. And I only say it from this perspective. Every individual I've ever met who, and I've done Trans Am, I've done bike nonstops, I've gone across the country in bike races twice, and then the Tour de Divide from Canada to Mexico on the Continental Divide Trail. And there's always Europeans and people from all over the world, Asia, and you get to meet some folks. And and if you get a connection point and they follow up, they all say the same thing. It's amazing, like, how nice the people are. And I think that's rare. It's not just America. It's everywhere. The amount of people that help, and they have no idea a race is going on. And you walk into a little diner, and the next thing you know, someone asks you a question. You start talking to them, and you know, and you're tired about what you're doing. The next thing you know, I mean, it's amazing. Like, someone picks up your check. Someone buys you something. I mean, it's mind-boggling to me how many great people I've met doing these things. And that's a personal thing. And that's a world thing. Because everyone has said the same thing when you do. It's no different than Transcontinental over there. I have Americans who've gone over and done the European famous bike race. And they said it's mind-boggling. You go through these little towns and these villages, and you get to see the nice thing about human, whatever we want to call it, personalities, and, you know, them loving where they live and trying to expound on, hey, this is what we have. So that is the thing that I always remember the most. I'm hoping most will remember that, other than the suffering that this is going to require. because this race will be unbelievable. I don't know if any, I don't even know if I have it in my mind yet how difficult this is going to be. It is going to be extreme. And I think that's the attraction to a certain degree to see, hey, can we get through it? And I mean, the key will be, can anyone finish it as well? A couple of guys from our team said, I mean, Don Devaney has told me, wait, I mean, we're counting on like people finishing. There might not be anyone that finishes the thing. So, I mean, hopefully we'll, I think we're going to have finisher for sure. I mean,
because
there's more experience now. I mean, if you've seen the people who are signed up, a lot of them have experience and that helps for sure.
Yeah. Well, I hope I finish well, because if I don't, I'll be stuck in the middle of America and I'll have no plane home. So that's my kind of driving. My driving force is to get to the other side of the country to get me flight that I have booked to get home.
You know what? It works. I got to tell you, Scar, when I did the Tour Divide, same thing. I mean, I don't, you know, we're going to Banff, Canada. So we're going way up into the Canadian Rockies where this race starts. And it's, you know, it's on all on trail, famous race. And, you know, there's been movies about it, and it's 2,700 miles self-supported. And it finishes on the Mexico border in New Mexico. So mine was the same way with flights. It's okay, I have a flight booked, and you give yourself some range there if things go wrong. But it does put a point on, hey, I mean, that's my only way home. Not that it wouldn't, because I live in the U.S. I could easily go and get something else. But it was a great thing in my mind, because this is way far away from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We're in a whole other side of the country in an area on the Mexico border. And it worked for me. I mean, it did. And I have to say, I pushed the last 2 or 3 days, and this is something you can kind of think in your brain, knowing that not only it wasn't a stress issue on the flight, but trying to get under a certain cutoff point I wanted to get under. And more importantly, there was that second component, which was I knew when that flight was, and I needed a couple of days to recover, because you can't just get on a flight when you finish this
thing. Yeah.
So that could be an advantage to you.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a bit of a strategy I have in my head as well. But even at that, like when you look at something, you know, as big as that as a whole, it can be overwhelming. But we were talking there the other day about, you know, breaking it down into you know, day by day or even hour by hour. Like, and, you know, I think we are saying you had an example up on the website of how you would break it down. So you had the swim could be like a day and a half. The bike would be 18, 19 days, which is 150 mile to 200 mile per day, and you'd be safe. And then the run, which is 40 mile a day, like, you know. So when you break it down like that, it's not easy, of course, but it's, you kind of start thinking, okay, maybe this is doable. Maybe I can definitely do 40 mile a day running over 4, 5, 6 days, you know, or wherever it is. But I think that's the way to approach something like this as well.
Yeah, you have to. And again, you got to take the small pieces, and you know that plan A is going to go wrong. Things will go awry. But if you can focus on it in steps and have just some boundaries of like, I'd like to get to this point at a certain point. And if it means it's 150 miles a day, it'll be interesting because, you know, each aspect of that beginning section, it's a lot of it's going to be heat related. You always have those issues that could happen with mechanicals that, you know, hey, you know, you're going to have to hitch to get to a bike shop, and then you're going to go back to your point where you were, you know, think if something majorly happens with the bike. But the time to make it up clearly is on the bike, because that 40 to 50 miles a day component, it sounds great. But even if you look in the DECA, there are very few people that do, you know, 100K a day on the run. They don't. I mean, there's some, of course, and even double DECA, you know, maybe. But on average, you know, it's, you need to have a little bit of buffer getting in there, knowing some things will go awry. So when I do that, you know, when you kind of break down that plan, you take each aspect, and you're right. You know, you can break it down and say, hey, this is kind of where the target goal is. If you miss the day, you might have to go and do an extra, as I always say, you know, do an extra 10 miles before you go to bed. And I always use that in my brain all the time. On the bike, not on the run, on the bike. You know, can I get an extra 10 miles in? Can I get an extra 8? That all adds up when you're talking about weeks. Now you've put another 100 miles under it, where if you're behind, you can gain back a bit. But I think that to some degree, a lot of folks, when we get to Death Valley, the strategy will be, you know, it's going to be hot. It depends on what time they get there. that, you know, starting out in the evening, it's going to be, if someone's finishing at 2 p.m, I can't envision them stopping at the, you know, being there at the hotel and getting out and running at 130 degrees or walking or whatever. It's about strategizing of how much time you have. But it's, I think it's very doable. It'll be, it's going to be interesting to say the least.
So. Absolutely. I tell you, you give me lots to think about there, especially with the heat side of it. I know we are talking, you've done a couple of videos on it. You were mentioning about getting in the sauna. So I have, I think 2 months before you were saying, so I have plans on doing that as well now after my 200-mile run that I'm doing in a couple of weeks. So, yeah, you've given me lots to think about here now for Trans Am Tri. So I'm very aware of your time, Wayne. We've been talking for an hour. I can't believe it already. So I just want to say massive, massive thanks for taking your time out and chat with me today. And I hope people get, especially anybody doing the Trans Am Tri with me or the Decaman in the USA, got some benefit out of listening to what you had to say there. So again, thanks so much for talking to me today, bud.
Thank you a bunch. And I'm looking forward to seeing you here in a few months. It's hard to believe we're less than 100 days until the start of Trans Am Tri. So I'm really looking forward to it. And thanks for having me on. And hopefully it was helpful.
Absolutely. And we'll get cracking on that Decaman Ireland.
Yes, exactly. And that is a priority for sure.
Absolutely. Okay, bud. Thanks so much again.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it, buddy.